Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are stripping away the buzzwords and looking at what is arguably the absolute high wire act of the business world.
Right.
You know, we spent a huge amount of time on the show talking about innovation, about having that light bulb moment and the mechanics of building things.
Yeah.
But in the U.S. business landscape, having a brilliant idea, that is really only the beginning.
It is. It's the entry ticket, but it's definitely not the prize. You can have the cure for the common cold sitting in a test tube, but if you can't communicate its value, if you can't get the resources to scale it,
it just dies.
It effectively dies in the lab.
That is a terrifying thought. The idea that the difference between a dream just fading away and becoming the next groundbreaking, you know, household name company often comes down to one specific performance. The pitch.
The pitch.
So today we are digging into a really comprehensive guide. It's titled Mastering the Art of Pitching Your Business Idea, a complete guide for U.S. entrepreneurs. And I want to be clear right off the bat, this isn't just about making pretty PowerPoint slides, is it?
Not at all.
Yeah.
If you think this is a design tutorial, you're missing the point. We are looking at decoding the specific psychology of the American investor.
Okay.
We're going to break down the structural requirements of winning deck, sure. But we're also going to get into the weeds of financial literacy, the numbers you absolutely cannot fake, and those subtle deal breakers that are usually invisible to first-time founders.
Until it's too late.
Until it's way too late.
So our mission is to basically give you the cheat codes for that high-pressure room.
Let's start with the vibe, or rather, the culture. The source material spends a surprising amount of time on the American dream narrative. Now, I have to be honest, to me that sounds a bit like a cliche. Is that actually useful?
It's not just useful, it's vital. You have to understand the context. In a US pitch, the American dream isn't just a political slogan, it's a psychological lever. Investors expect it.
Really?
They aren't just buying a widget or a piece of software, they are buying a story of grit. They want to hear about overcoming obstacles, bootstrapping, that relentless determination. So if you just walk in and say, here's a spreadsheet, the numbers work, give me money,
yeah,
you're missing the emotional hook.
Precisely. You're boring them. And in a pitch, boredom is death. But there is a very fine line the source points out, and this is where I see a lot of people trip up. It's the balance between confidence and arrogance.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the stereotype of the American CEO, at least if you watch movies or TV,
yeah,
is someone who is incredibly loud, brash, you know.
Takes up all the oxygen in the room.
Exactly. Is that what investors want?
That's the Hollywood caricature, but in a real pitch, that attitude kills you. American business culture values directness, absolutely. Unlike some cultures where modesty is the default.
Right.
U.S. investors expect you to believe you are going to win. They want conviction. But, and this is a huge but, it cannot cross into arrogance where you stop listening.
So what does that distinction sound like in practice? How do I sound confident without sounding like a jerk?
Well, arrogance sounds like, I am smarter than everyone in this room, I have no competition, and this cannot fail. That just scares investors.
Shows you're blind to risk.
Exactly. It shows a lack of judgment. Confidence sounds more like, I believe in this vision deeply, I know the risks involved, and I have a clear plan to navigate them. It's, I have the solution, not, you're lucky to be listening to me.
That's a key distinction. It's about being grounded. Mm-hmm. Now, this ties into another psychological aspect the source highlights, which I think is fascinating. The obsession with speed and scale.
Yes.
Why is the U.S. market so obsessed with how fast you can grow? Why can't a good business just be a good business?
It comes down to the math of the investors, particularly if we are talking about venture capitalists or VCs.
Right.
They aren't looking for a nice, slow lifestyle business. They operate on what's called the power law. They expect most of their investments to fail or, you know, break even.
So the ones that succeed have to make up for all the losses?
They need to be huge. They need to return the entire fund.
So if I come in saying, we're going to build a lovely, profitable business that stays small and local for 20 years, that sounds responsible to me. But to a VC...
To a VC, that's uninvestable. That's a fine business for a bank loan, maybe, but it's not an equity play. You have to answer, how big can this get and how fast can you get there? If you can't show that potential for scale, you're in the wrong room.
Okay, so we have to sell the growth. Now, before we get into the slides and the numbers, which we will get to, I promise, there is one rule of thumb from the source that I absolutely love. They call it the middle schooler test.
This is one of my favorite takeaways from the entire guide. It sounds simple, but it is excruciatingly hard to do in practice.
So what's the rule?
The rule is, you must be able to explain your unique value proposition, your UVP, in a single sentence that a middle schooler, say a 12-year-old, could understand.
So, no buzzwords, no synergistic paradigm shifts in the blockchain ecosystem.
Exactly. If you rely on jargon, it's usually a mask. If you can't explain it simply, it's a signal you haven't clarified your own thinking.
And I guess if a 12-year-old gets bored, an investor probably will too.
They will. Remember, investors see hundreds, maybe thousands of pitches a year. They are just as busy and have just as short an attention span as that middle schooler.
That is a humbling thought. Okay, so let's say we've got our mindset right. We are confident, we're thinking big, and we can explain it to a 12-year-old. Let's talk structure.
The anatomy of the perfect pitch.
How do we actually start the conversation?
Well, the source is very clear on how not to start. Do not start with, hi, thanks for your time, and definitely do not start with a 5-minute biography of yourself.
But isn't that just being polite?
It's polite, but it burns your most valuable currency attention.
Yeah.
You have seconds to capture them before they start checking their emails under the table.
So you need the hook.
You need the hook. And there are two main techniques mentioned that work really well. One is the imagine technique. You paint a scenario.
Give me an example.
Imagine being a small business owner who spends 10 hours a week just trying to figure out payroll, terrified you're going to make a mistake and get fined. You put the investor in the shoes of the user immediately.
I like that. It creates empathy right off the bat. You feel the pain.
Exactly. The other is the what if frame. What if you could diagnose a disease before symptoms ever appeared? You're inviting them to envision a future where your solution already exists.
So you hook them, and then you have to define the problem. But I noticed the source says it's not enough to just say people have this problem.
Right. Vague problems get vague interest. The problem needs to be quantified. You can't just say supply chains are inefficient.
It's too broad.
Way too broad. You have to say this specific inefficiency costs the shipping industry $4 billion a year.
Money talks.
It does.
Yeah.
And you need to demonstrate urgency. You have to show that customers are already trying to solve it, but the current solutions, they suck.
So they are currently duct taping this together using three different spreadsheets, and it's costing them money.
Exactly. That proves the pain is real. If nobody is trying to solve it, maybe it's not actually a problem worth paying for.
Just an annoyance.
Just a minor annoyance.
Right.
Then comes the solution. And I feel like this is where tech founders especially trip up. They want to talk about the code. Yes, the dreaded features trap. Investors do not care about the technical specs, at least not in the first meeting. They care about outcomes.
Benefits, not features.
Benefits, not features. And the golden rule here is show, don't tell.
So visuals.
It means if you have a prototype, bring it. If you have software, show a demo. Visual proof beats verbal claims every single time. If you can put the product in their hands, you've won half the battle.
Right. It's not just vaporware.
It's real.
Okay. So we've hooked them, defined the pain, and shown the aspirin. Now we get to the part that scares a lot of creative types. The market sizing.
Mm-hmm.
And we see these acronyms thrown around.
Mm-hmm.
TAM, SAM, SOM. Can you break these down? Let's say I'm selling a new type of organic insect-based dog food.
Okay, bold choice, but let's go with it. So TAM is total addressable market. This is the theoretical maximum. If every single dog owner in the U.S. bought your insect dog food.
The whole pie. Every dog in America is eating my bugs.
Right. That's a huge number. Then you have SAM, serviceable addressable market. That's the slice of the pie you can actually reach. Maybe you only sell online. So it's the organic dog food sold online market.
Okay. Getting more realistic.
And finally, SOM, serviceable obtainable market. This is your immediate target. Based on your marketing budget and your sales team, who can you capture in the next 18 to 24 months?
It's a funnel. Big dream, realistic reach, immediate target.
Correct. But here is the massive red flag the source warns about, the 1% fallacy.
Oh, I think I've heard this. The pet food market is $50 billion, so if we just get 1%.
We just need 1% to be rich. Investors hate this. It drives them crazy.
Why? I mean, 1% seems conservative. It seems humble.
Because it's viewed as lazy analysis. It implies you think getting customers is easy just by existing.
If we build it, 1% will come.
No, they won't. You need to build your market size from the bottom up. How many customers can you call? What is your conversion rate? Show you understand the actual work required to get that 1%.
That makes sense. It shifts the conversation from luck to strategy. And that leads us perfectly into the hard stuff, money, models, and the team.
Mm-hmm.
The source emphasizes financial literacy. You can't just be the idea guy anymore.
No. In the U.S., especially if you are asking for millions of dollars, you need to know your unit economics. The two big ones are CAC and LTV.
Customer acquisition cost and lifetime value. Let's dig into these.
Right. TAC is, how much do I spend in marketing and sales to get one person to buy a bag of dog food? Let's say you spend $10,000 on ads and you get 200 customers. Your CAC is $50.
Okay, $50 out the door to get one person in.
And LTV is, how much profit do you make from that customer before they leave? If they buy $500 worth of food over 2 years, you're in good shape. Mm-hmm. But if it costs you $50 to get them and they only ever spend $40...
You don't have a business, you have a money pit.
You have a money pit. You're losing $10 on every single customer. And you can't make that up with volume. A general rule of thumb investors look for a ratio of 3-to-1. LTV should be 3 times your CAC.
And if you don't know these numbers...
You look dangerous.
And what about projections? I feel like everyone puts up a chart that looks like a hockey stick, flat, 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 and then boom, straight up.
And investors are so cynical about the hockey stick chart, the source warns against showing that explosive growth without a clear cause.
Right.
If you show a hockey stick, you better be able to explain exactly what happens at that inflection point. Is it a new product launch? Hmm. A partnership? If it's just magic happens here, they won't buy it.
So steady, defensible acceleration is better than magical explosions.
Always. Credibility is your currency.
Let's talk about the team slide. The source says investors back people more than ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a real question. What if you don't have a full team? Do you hide that?
This is a crucial detail. Do not hide it. Be honest about the gaps. It is actually better to say, we are great at product and sales, but we lack a financial lead, so we plan to hire a CFO with this funding.
It shows self-awareness.
Yes. Arrogance is pretending you know everything. Confidence is knowing what you don't know and having a plan to fix it.
That's a great distinction. Now, we touched on this earlier, but not all investors are the same. The pitch you give to a VC in Silicon Valley is not the same pitch you give to a bank officer in Ohio.
Completely different games, and treating them the same is a fatal error. We talked about VCs. They want home runs.
Go big or go home.
Right. But angel investors, these are high net worth individuals investing their own money. They might invest because they like you personally or they care about the industry. You can be more authentic, more personal.
And the ask is smaller.
Usually, yeah. Then there are corporate investors. This is when a big company like Google or Ford invests in you. They're looking for strategic fit.
Mm-hmm.
How does your technology help their business?
So you pitch synergy.
You pitch how you solve their problem. And finally, the SBA and banks. A totally different universe.
How so?
They don't care about explosive growth. In fact, explosive growth looks risky to them. They care about risk mitigation. They want to know, can you pay this loan back with interest?
They want collateral and cash flow.
Exactly. Do not go into a bank talking about disrupting the industry. They will show you the door.
That's really important. It's about knowing who is sitting across the table. And speaking of which, let's talk about the actual delivery, the performance.
Mm-hmm. Nonverbal cues. Eye contact is huge in the U.S. And here's a specific tip from the guide I think is brilliant. Make eye contact with everyone in the room, not just the lead partner.
Don't ignore the associate in the corner.
Exactly. That associate might be the one writing the investment memo later that night. If you ignored them, they won't fight for you.
And the slides themselves.
Visuals over text. Professional design matters. It signals attention to detail. If your slides are messy with typos, investors assume your operations are messy too.
That brings us to the Q&A. This is the part that usually terrifies people.
But the source argues the Q&A is where the real evaluation happens. It tests how you handle pressure. Anyone can memorize a script.
But can you handle a curveball?
Exactly. So first, listen to the whole question. Don't interrupt. And second, and this is liberating if you don't know, admit it.
Really? Just say, I don't know. Won't that make me look incompetent?
No, bluffing makes you look incompetent. Say, I don't know the exact figure right now, but I will get back to you with that data. That is infinitely better than making something up.
Because they can smell a bluff a mile away.
A mile away, and you lose all credibility.
And the source mentions a technique called the pivot.
Yes. You can use questions to pivot back to your strengths. If they ask about a competitor, don't just bash the competitor. Say, that raises an interesting point about user retention, which is where we fundamentally differ. And then you steer the conversation to your amazing customer loyalty data.
Okay, let's fast forward. The pitch is over. You walked out of the room. Are we done?
Not even close. The follow-up is critical. You need to send a thank you note within 24 hours and remember that data you promised.
The thing you didn't know.
Send it immediately. It shows you execute.
And we have to talk about rejection, because the reality is most pitches get a no.
Rejection is just part of the process. A no today isn't necessarily a no forever. Ask for feedback. if you keep them updated on your progress, that no can turn into a yes in the next round.
They want to see progress over time.
A line, not just a dot.
Before we move to mistakes, there were a couple of legal terms the source flagged: accredited investors and pre versus post money.
Right, these are basics. An accredited investor is a legal definition in the U.S. Basically, someone with an income over 200K or a net worth over $1 million.
And for many types of fundraising, you can legally only pitch to these people.
Yes, be careful. If you take money from non-accredited investors incorrectly, you can have major legal headaches later.
And pre-money versus post-money.
This is simple math that confuses everyone. Pre-money is what the company is worth before the cash hits the bank. Post-money is the value after.
So if my company is worth $4 million pre-money and you give me $1 million,
then the post-money valuation is $5 million. And that matters because if I invest $1 million into a $5 million post-money company, I own 20%. You need to be crystal clear on which one you're debating.
Got it. Okay, let's wrap up with the don'ts, the common mistakes that sink the ship.
The biggest one, in my opinion, is the no competition lie.
We have no competition. No one is doing this.
Never, ever say this. Even if no direct rival exists, the status quo is a competitor. Inertia is a competitor. Excel spreadsheets are a competitor. If you say you have no competition, you just look naive.
What else?
Overcomplicating. Hmm. Avoid jargon. Remember the middle schooler test. And finally, poor time management. If you have 20 minutes and you spend 18 minutes on the intro,
you have failed.
You have failed. It shows a lack of preparation and respect. If you can't manage a meeting, how can you manage a company?
It's basic respect. So what does this all mean? We've covered psychology, structure, hard numbers, delivery.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the source is really saying that pitching is a learned skill. It's not an innate talent.
You're not born a good pitcher.
No. It requires research, practice, and resilience. It's a performance. And like any performance, you have to rehearse. And the most successful entrepreneurs aren't always the ones with the best ideas.
They're the ones who can convince people.
They are the ones who can convince others to believe in their vision. The pitch is the bridge between the idea and reality.
That is a powerful thought. The pitch is the bridge.
It is. And you have to build it strong enough to walk across.
So here is a final provocation for you listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the middle schooler test earlier. I want you to actually try it.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to explain your current project, whatever you're working on right now, to a middle schooler, could you do it in one sentence?
Without using the words platform, synergy, or disrupt?
Exactly. If you can't, you have work to do. Go simplify. Thanks for listening to this deep dive into the art of the pitch. We'll see you next time.